Happening now, breaking news, bragging about the crowd. New cell phone video undercuts President Trump's claims his visits to grieving cities weren't political. He was caught on camera bragging about the size of the crowd at his El Paso political rally. Behind the scenes, some of the president's top aides say the trip didn't go well and the media coverage wasn't favorable. NRA's warning. CNN has also learned the president has spoken to the NRA's top executive multiple times this week. He's being warned his talk of expanding background checks won't sit well with his supporters. Despite the mass shootings, our new gun restrictions going nowhere. Raided. Families are torn apart after federal agents detained hundreds of undocumented migrants in Mississippi on the first day of school. Children came home to find their parents gone. What happens to them now? And 2020 soapbox. The Democratic presidential candidates, with Joe Biden leading the pack, flocked to the Iowa State Fair to make their pitch to the voters in person. As a brand new Iowa poll shows, minds may be changing. Wolf Blitzer is off. I'm Jim Acosta, and you're in the Situation Room.
This is CNN Breaking News.
Breaking news tonight, top aides to President Trump are conceding his visits to Dayton and El Paso, cities shaken by mass shootings, did not go well. This comes after embarrassing cell phone video surfaced from the president's stop at an El Paso hospital. It shows him pivoting away from praising the medical staff to brag about the size of the crowd at his political rally in El Paso several months ago. A hospital official who spoke with CNN confirms the eight patients being treated for their wounds declined to meet with Trump, so two discharged patients were brought in, including a baby who lost both parents as they shielded him during the attack. We'll get reaction from Democratic Congressman Mike Quigley of Illinois, a member of the Intelligence Committee, and our correspondents and analysts have full coverage of the day's top stories. Let's begin with CNN's Caitlin Collins. Caitlin, what are you hearing about the president's trip?
Well, Jim, we're hearing that not even the president himself is pleased with the coverage from that trip, and he's blaming it in part on his staff for not letting the cameras come in to capture the interactions that he did have with some of those discharged patients and some of the medical staff. But in turn, the president's own aides are conceding that that video showing the president bragging about his crowd sizes when he was in El Paso the last time shows that that trip did not go how they thought it would.
Tonight, some of President Trump's own aides are conceding his visits to two cities in mourning didn't go as planned after new video shows him bragging about crowd sizes while at a hospital in El Paso.
We met with also the doctors, the nurses, the medical staff.
The White House stopped reporters and their cameras from capturing the president's visit, but new cell phone video shows Trump praising medical staff before turning the conversation to himself.
I was here 3 months ago. We made a speech and we had what was the name of the arena? That place was packed, right?
I was front row.
Right? The judges have respected
you. I was front row.
What was the name?
I was front row.
Oh, good. Come here, man. That was some crowd.
Thank you.
And we had twice the number outside. And then he had this crazy Beto. Beto had like 400 people in a parking lot. They said his crowd was wonderful.
The president bragging about how many people attended his February rally, where he boasted of booting undocumented immigrants from the country.
They go into our country. The good news is we have great law enforcement, and many of these people, we know where they are, and we're going to get them the hell out.
But the president still owes the city of El Paso over $500,000 in unpaid fees for police use and public safety costs for that trip. CNN has learned that Trump lashed out at his staff for keeping the cameras away during his visits to two hospitals, complaining he wasn't getting enough credit, though aides said it was out of respect for the patients. The Washington Post reports that none of those eight patients at one Texas hospital Trump visited agreed to meet with him, while two who had been discharged did return for his visit. The president's trip now being followed about new questions on what's next for gun control. Trump has told aides and lawmakers he's open to endorsing extensive background checks.
So I think background checks are important. I don't want to put guns into the hands of mentally unstable people.
It's a position he's taken before, but never followed through on.
We're going to be very strong on background checks. We'll be doing very strong background checks.
We certainly have to strengthen background checks. Everybody agrees with that.
we're really, I think, going to have the support of the NRA having to do with background checks, very strong background checks.
New reporting might explain why.
There's no bigger fan of the Second Amendment than me, and there's no bigger fan of the NRA.
CNN has learned the president has spoken with NRA chief Wayne LaPierre several times in recent days. And LaPierre warned Trump his supporters in deep red areas don't want expanded background checks. The NRA spent more than $30 million to get Trump elected in 2016, according to financial records, and has swayed him on gun control in the past.
I mean, they're very close to me. I'm very close to them.
Now, Jim, we also have some new reporting coming into CNN tonight, and that's that the acting DHS Secretary, Kevin McAleenan, came to the White House about 6 weeks ago prepared to resign after President Trump had threatened to deport millions of undocumented immigrants in a tweet. McAleenan came arguing to the chief of staff and his staff that essentially that was too big in scope and that the president shouldn't be disclosing it the way he did in a tweet. Obviously, he did not resign because he's still on the job today. But the episode does reveal just what a tough time McAleenan has had in the position that he's in, because at times he agrees with the president strongly. Other times they do not agree or see eye to eye on certain issues. And this is a job, we should note, that Kevin McAleenan never thought he was going to get in the first place.
Caitlin Collins, thank you very much. A hospital official at El Paso's University Medical Center said none of the eight patients who were on hand for the president's visit wanted to meet Mr. Trump or have any visitors at all. Quote, some didn't want any visitors, the official told me, before adding, quote, some did not want to meet him. But we have confirmed two patients who had been discharged were brought back to the hospital to meet with the president. CNN has learned one of those patients was the two-month-old baby who was shielded by his parents during the shooting. That baby has been identified as the child of Jordan and Andre Onchondo, who died protecting him. According to the hospital official, the president displayed a, quote, absence of empathy during his visit. That hospital official went on to say the president made other comments similar to his remarks about former Congressman Beto O'Rourke that left some staffers thinking Mr. Trump was not focused enough on consoling people. That hospital official went on to say about the patients, quote, the stories and retelling of their experience at that Walmart will chill you to your core and break your heart. CNN's Brian Todd has been on the ground in El Paso all week. What's the reaction there the day after the president's visit, Brian?
Well, Jim, there is some support here on the ground for President Trump's visit, but the overwhelming majority of the people here in El Paso who CNN's teams have talked to were either angry about the president's visit or flat out just didn't want him to come here. Meanwhile, tonight, we have some jarring new information about possible warning signs missed and some very serious questions being raised. Could a little bit more information from the suspect's family and a few simple questions asked by police of that family have prevented this attack? Tonight, as authorities piece together a profile of the alleged shooter, 21-year-old Patrick Crucius, CNN is learning more about possible warning signs in the weeks leading up to the massacre. Lawyers for the suspect's family tell CNN his mother contacted police weeks ago in their hometown of Allen, Texas, because she was worried about her son owning an AK-style firearm. The family attorneys say her warning was more innocuous in nature, concerned about her son owning the weapon because of his age, maturity level, and inexperience with such a firearm, but not out of concern that he posed a threat.
If the call came in here in El Paso, a police officer would respond to the home and speak to the mother more in detail.
The suspect's family's lawyers say Allen police took the mother's call, but based on her description of her son's situation, she was told her son was legally allowed to possess the weapon. The mother didn't give her name or her son's name, the lawyers say, and they say police didn't ask for any more information. Former El Paso Police Detective Miguel Vega says he doesn't want to pass judgment on how the Allen police responded, but he says if he had taken the mother's call...
Me personally, I probably would have tried to inquire more information, names, address, a little bit more information to warrant a further investigation, further look into it.
Allen police tell CNN they always ask if a person calling with those concerns wants to give more information, wants to file a formal report, or wants them to investigate further. But they say in this case, they're not certain what happened because the mother gave so little information. One lawyer for the suspect's family tells CNN, quote, this was not a volatile, explosive, erratic behaving kid. It's not like alarm bells were going off. There are currently 17 states and Washington, D.C., most of which lean Democrat, that allow extreme risk protection orders or red flag laws, allowing authorities to confiscate firearms from those deemed to be a risk to themselves or others. Those orders are generally prompted by warnings from relatives and must be approved by a judge. Texas is not one of the states that have red flag laws, but it's also not clear the warning from Crucius's mother would have been urgent enough to require confiscation. Experts say the best way to help a loved one you're concerned about is to seek out help immediately.
People can be worried that if they call the authorities, it's going to have a negative influence on someone they care about a great deal. They have to remember that the truth is exactly the opposite. Getting the help, getting the treatment that they need can have a dramatic effect for the better on their lives.
Meanwhile, tonight we're told the FBI is stepping up its efforts to monitor these kinds of threats in real time. The FBI, we're told, has started hiring specialists to gather and feed the Bureau data from platforms like Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter in real time as threats are made on those platforms. We are told the FBI actually started doing this about a month before the attacks in El Paso and Dayton. Jim?
Brian Todd, thank you. Also breaking tonight, new details about the unprecedented sweep targeting hundreds of undocumented immigrants in Mississippi. It came on the opening day of school, separating families without warning. CNN's Diane Gallagher is in Mississippi. Diane, what's the latest on these ICE raids? And what about all of those children who were suddenly stranded without their parents?
Well, Jim, we just got some brand new numbers from the government. If you remember, 680 people who were detained from seven different sites in six cities around Jackson, Mississippi. 377 remain in custody, either in Mississippi or in Louisiana. They've released 303 people either here on site or after they processed those individuals. And then they said they took them and dropped them off back at the arrest site. But I have talked to some people who said they were dropped off at a different site more than an hour away and people had to come and get them. Now, we learned that they found 18 juveniles working inside these plants, like the one you see here behind me. One of them as young as 14 years old. And look, when you're talking about children, Jim, you cannot ignore what happened on the first day of school yesterday. All of those kids who just didn't have their parents to come pick them up, although we are told that law enforcement let the schools know as the raid was going on. There were people who opened up their homes, even a man who opened up his gym for kids that were in daycare, were in school, and didn't know where their parents are. Listen to the trauma in these children's voices.
Governments, please put your heart. Let my parents be free with everybody else, please. Don't leave the child with crying and everything. I need my dad for me. My dad didn't do nothing. He's not a criminal.
Please, can I just see my mother, please?
Please.
Now, look, that little girl who was looking for her mother at that ICE bus, she has been reunited with her. I spoke with both of them just a little bit ago. They're back together. Now, look, ICE has said that they feel like they understand that people are kind of concerned with the timing of this, that the first day of school had nothing to do with it. I want to read you something that we were told here. They said this was planned for months, well before El Paso, well before the shootings happened. The dates just happened to be after El Paso. On our end, this was months and months of planning by intel agents, locals. We did this under past presidents. This is business as usual for us. A lot of people saying it was insensitive. It was cruel to do something so soon after a racist massacre that targeted Latinos in El Paso, that it just re-traumatized a community that was already afraid and shell-shocked, Jim.
All right, Diane Gallagher, thank you very much. Joining us now is Illinois Democratic Representative Mike Quigley. He's a member of the Intelligence Committee. Congressman, thanks for joining us. Let's start with the president's trip to El Paso. What does it say to you that so many of these patients who were wounded in that shooting did not want to meet with President Trump?
I think they've seen the president in action before. This isn't a trip about comforting. It wasn't an empathetic, sympathetic trip. It was a trip about the president, our narcissistic leader, unfortunately, who put himself and his politics above the needs of those who have suffered so miserably in the last few days.
And Congressman, President Trump, as you were seeing there just a few moments ago, he was fuming that he didn't get credit for his visit yesterday. How does that reflect on his leadership, do you think, in times like these?
You know, I think that a true leader would not want a camera anywhere near his activities there and talking to these individuals one on one. I wouldn't even want him to talk about it after the fact. These are private moments that mean so much to those who have suffered. The fact that he doesn't understand that really reflects on his lack of leadership.
And CNN has learned that the El Paso suspect's mother called police a few weeks before the shooting. She was concerned about her son having an AK-type gun, an assault-style rifle. Do you think warning signs were missed here?
I think there's all too often that the warning signs are missed in these mass shootings. Given the sheer volume of it, it means law enforcement needs more resources and obviously more training as it reflects these things. It reminds me, I was at the Supreme Court when they were debating the Chicago gun case, the arguments, and it was very clear that they were going to stand for the Second Amendment. On the other hand, though, they were very clear when they wrote the opinion that despite the fact that there is a Second Amendment right, it's not unlimited, and that everyone should be able to have any kind of gun that they want. I think the Supreme Court was talking about instances just like this.
And you probably have heard this week, President Trump has expressed support for background checks and red flag laws, but he's also been speaking to the NRA Chief Wayne LaPierre. Is it realistic to expect any action on this, do you think?
I don't expect it from the president. If the president was serious about it, he'd be having Mitch McConnell in his office and talking about voting on a bill that the House already voted on and passed dealing with background checks. President's been in office for some time now, and for much of that time, over half of it, he had the majority in the House and the Senate. We could have acted any time and passed those measures before yet another disaster like this one.
And Congressman, as you know, officials at the Department of Homeland Security have been urging the White House to make the threat of domestic terrorism a higher priority, but that they have been rebuffed. What does that tell you?
That they're not as focused on it as they should be. They don't recognize where the threats are. The fact is, there are more resources that need to be devoted to this. The FBI director talked about this just the other day. They need more analysis. They need more resources. And we need to look at the laws as related to this, because there appears to be gaps that need to be analyzed, particularly material support for those who commit domestic terror acts like this. There's clearly, at this point, not even a law that relates to domestic terrorism. That's work that has to be done.
All right, Representative Mike Quigley, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. And stay with us for more on the breaking news, Inside Reaction. President Trump's visits to Dayton and El Paso, his aides concede things did not go well, and a hospital official says the president displayed an absence of empathy. Breaking news, an official at El Paso's University Medical Center tells CNN that none of the patients at the hospital wanted to meet with President Trump yesterday. Instead, two previously discharged patients, including a two-month-old baby, were brought back to meet with the president. We're joined now by Democratic presidential candidate John Delaney. He's in Iowa for the state fair, a crucial campaign stop for Democrats hoping to capture the party's nomination. Congressman Delaney, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. During the president's trip yesterday, he went after Democratic officials, as I'm sure you saw, at the hospital. He boasted about the crowd size during his last visit to El Paso. And on the way home, he apparently fumed about not getting enough credit for his visit. What message does that send to the families who are still grieving right now?
Well, it's a terrible message, Jim. And once again, the president is saying it's all about me. And that is at the core of his failed leadership. He thinks this is all about him. He's a narcissist. I mean, this is an extraordinarily difficult time for the families that are affected by this. No words can describe the really pain that they're experiencing. And for the entire El Paso community, and for the president to make those kind of comments is consistent with his failed leadership and the terrible tone he sets at the top ever since he's become the president of the United States. And it's just terribly unfortunate that this is who we have representing our country at this moment in time. And I feel bad for the families that they had to endure whatever kind of circus was created by him going to the hospital and making the comments he did.
And it looked like the president might be open to background checks and red flag laws. That's what we've been hearing this week. But he's getting pushback from the head of the National Rifle Association, Wayne LaPierre. You say President Trump has bowed to the NRA. What is your plan to address the NRA's influence? Because it seems even though the organization may seem a bit weakened by now around Washington, it is still a potent force out there.
So I'll tell you what I wouldn't do. I wouldn't be consulting with the NRA in terms of what I want to do going forward. That's the last thing I would be doing. He shouldn't be talking to the NRA. He should be talking to the leaders of Congress. He should have McConnell and Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi all in a room talking about how we actually pass universal background checks. Because, again, background checks are actually the law of this country. We just have an enormous loophole with these gun shows. And he should be closing that. That's what I will do as president. He should be putting limits on certain military-style assault weapons, which we did before, Jim, as you know, on a bipartisan basis. That used to be the law of the land in this country. And we need to be doing that again. And then there's other things we need to be doing, red flag laws, a whole variety of things. I won't be consulting with the NRA and making these decisions with respect to keeping the American people safe, you know, in their shopping malls and in movie theaters and in their schools.
And Joe Biden, the former vice president, your rival for the Democratic nomination, had to say this on the issue of white supremacy. Let's watch this.
Do you believe that the president is a white supremacist?
I believe everything the president says and has done encourages white supremacists. And I'm not sure there's much of a distinction. As a matter of fact, it may be even worse. In fact, if you're out there trying to, in fact, curry the favor of white supremacists or any group that, in fact, is anathema to everything we believe.
Do you agree with that assessment, Congressman?
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with the sentiments that the vice president is putting forth there. I mean, this is the point. The president has the most important microphone. He has the most important loudspeaker, bully pulpit, whatever you want to call it, not only in the United States of America, but around the world. And a president should be using that to unify our country, appeal to our better angels, as Lincoln famously said, and trying to inspire people and lift them up wherever they are. And a president should be projecting an image to the American people that has us move forward and is always talking against hate and bigotry and talking for unity. And the president has used this loudspeaker that he has in many ways to do the opposite, right? He has said repeatedly racist things. He has said things to create kind of equivalency between individuals who protest racism and people who are attacking protesters against racism, like he did in Charlottesville. He has consistently used this kind of cherished and sacred loudspeaker that he has as president of the United States to do the opposite of what he should be doing. A real leader would be inspiring the American people to unify. They would be appealing to the better angels in who we are, and they'd be reminding the American people that our enemy is not each other, but we're in this together, united we stand. And that's really the beating heart of this nation.
And the
president fundamentally does not do that.
And Congressman, you're polling at 1% in this new Monmouth poll of Iowa caucus goers, but you've been running the longest of any Democratic candidate in terms of a campaign. Why do you think you're not breaking through? And if you don't qualify for the next Democratic debate, are you going to pull the plug?
No, I'm in this. The only poll that matters to me is the Iowa caucus. And I'm in it to the Iowa caucus. Listen, we think it's early. We think only a handful of candidates really are getting the majority of the attention right now. The field is very large. I think this last debate that CNN hosted really showed some of the contrasts that exist within the party. I think the American people have a very important question to ask themselves when they nominate the Democratic nominee for president, is who can beat Donald Trump and who can be the kind of leader that this country needs. And to beat Donald Trump, we need someone who can build a big tent party and who has an economic vision that a majority of Americans can get behind. And the next leader we need is someone who will restore decency and honor to the White House, someone who will unify our country, and someone who will start getting things done, not with a bunch of impossible promises, but with real solutions. And that's what I'm running on, and that's what I believe most Americans are looking for, and I believe most Democrats are looking for that. I think it's still early, and we're very committed to the race.
Okay, Congressman John Delaney, thank you very, very much for joining us, and hope you have a good time over at the Iowa State Fair. We appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Jim.
All right, and coming up, the NRA has been working the White House phones as the powerful gun lobby warns President Trump against supporting background checks. Plus, some are boycotting the popular fitness chain SoulCycle after news breaks that the owner is a Trump supporter, and he's putting his money where his mouth is. Breaking news. New video shows President Trump bragging about his crowd sizes as he met with medical staff at an El Paso hospital where eight victims of Saturday's mass murder were still recovering. Let's discuss with our political experts. And Ryan Lizza, we're getting a look inside. You've seen this video earlier in the day. President Trump meeting with medical staff and first responders in El Paso. Let's watch.
I was here 3 months ago. We made a speech and we had a what was the name of the arena? That place was packed, right? That was some crowd.
Thank you.
And we had twice the number outside. And then he had this crazy Beto. Beto had like 400 people in a parking lot. They said his crowd was wonderful.
You know, I just left. We made a speech here about 3 months ago. And we could have sold it out four times. So I have a good feeling. You know that, right?
What do you make of that, Ryan? What's your assessment
there? It's Beto, not Beto.
Right.
And at that point, I don't think Beto was even running for president. I don't think he had announced yet. And look, when the president made that speech, that teleprompter speech earlier in the week, a lot of us who have seen Trump make speeches like that before warned people and said, whatever he says in that speech, don't make that the story because we've been through this before. Trump is Trump. We know what his obsessions are. We know what how he grapples with major news stories and tragedies. And look at his actual statements to people and his tweets, not a speech that his speechwriters wrote and he read on teleprompter. So I'm not surprised at all that he went to a hospital and talked about the things that obsess him all the time. Top on that list is crowd size, right below what people on cable news are talking about with respect to him. So that's who Donald Trump is. He's obsessed with crowd size, even in the middle of a tragedy, and even when talking to first responders and physicians who are dealing with it.
What did you think, Jeffrey Toobin, when you saw that video today?
I thought it was great. I thought it was totally appropriate. Brother Jim, you work at the White House. You see this every day. Like, we need to put this in a time capsule because people will not believe this, that this actually went on in the United States. It's not that presidents don't behave this way. Human beings don't behave that way. I mean, you know, we run out of adjectives and, you know, who talks that way at a place where they are trying to save people's lives after a mass shooting? It is just not normal.
And Sabrina Siddiqui, I mean, some of the patients at the hospital were told did not even want to meet with the president. Some didn't want to meet with anybody because they're still recovering. But what does that say that some of these patients said, no, I don't want to meet the president of the United States?
Well, when you look at the circumstances around this shooting, there's still a lot we don't yet know. But this is a gunman who attacked a predominantly Hispanic community. And authorities are investigating this manifesto that he allegedly wrote with a great deal of anti-immigrant hate-filled language that was reminiscent of some of the rhetoric we've heard from the president. And so I think for a lot of people, he's not the person, especially if you're talking about these victims, that they want to hear from at this point. And if you even look at the way in which he's responded to this, again, we've seen who Trump is, so I don't think anyone was expecting a pivot. The pivot's not going to happen. We know that. But there's been no attempt to reach out to the Hispanic community. In that speech he delivered to the American public on Monday, no mention of the contributions that immigrants make to society. In fact, the one time he was even asked about the manifesto, he deflected and said, well, I'm talking about illegal immigration. I don't want illegal immigration or open borders. He was right back to the same message that we're going to continue to hear from him at these rallies because that's who he is. That's what he's running on. It's very clear. And I think there's just a refusal on the part of the president or the White House to even acknowledge the role that his rhetoric may play in inciting violence. And that's why you're seeing, I think, that rejection of his visit, those protests that you saw yesterday.
And Rebecca Buck, should we be surprised anymore or shocked anymore when this happens?
No. As Ryan said, I mean, this is just Donald Trump and voters supported him in 2016. They'll make the decision again in 2020. But with Donald Trump, what you see is what you get. There is no empathy. There is no sympathy in times of crisis like this, in times of great tragedy. He is never going to be that consoler in chief. He is never going to be a president who has this sort of demonstrates this moral leadership in an event like this. And so it's always going to be about him. And that's kind of where this went off the rails. If he had shown some compassion for the people who were suffering, I think he would have gotten a lot of brownie points for it and really surprised a lot of people. But he made it about him.
Jeffrey.
But isn't there another possibility that a lot of people like this behavior. And, you know, he is not as different from other Americans as we may think. I mean, that's the thing. You know, here we are clutching our pearls. Isn't this so terrible? You know what?
You think they like bragging about crowd sizes in the hospital? In the hospital?
Well, you know what? I mean, you know better than I the list of outrageous things he said during the campaign. And he's the, you know, he won the gold medal in that election. So, I mean, the idea that Donald Trump is some aberration, I think the most chilling thought may be that he's not, and that other people, lots of millions of other Americans, think exactly the same way.
OK, stand by, everybody. We're going to talk about more of this and the breaking news right after this. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're just hearing in the last few moments that the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell will not be calling the Senate back to take up gun legislation during their recess, and that the NRA chief Wayne LaPierre has been speaking with the president a few times this week. So some of the new developments coming in, and Ryan Lizza, it seems like we've seen this movie before.
Yeah, look, there's this. We all knew or assumed that the Senate, that Mitch McConnell was not going to listen to Chuck Schumer and get everyone back here from their August vacation. But what happens now? The sense of urgency and outrage starts to dissipate. The Senate comes back in the fall. They have other issues on their agenda. Even the Democrats, they have a full slate of issues they're campaigning on, not just guns. So, you know, Congress often needs to be, you know, like, it needs like electrocution to do anything, right? It needs to be shocked into doing anything. And we have seen this movie so many times before, people outraged. Everyone in the media covering it 24/7, Democrats seized by this, and then the sense of urgency dissipates.
And let's put up the Time magazine cover for this week. It says enough. It mentions all of these mass shootings that have occurred over the last several years here in the U.S., much of it propelled sometimes by white supremacist or far-right extremists. Rebecca Buck, I mean, this sort of punctuates what Ryan Lizza was just saying a few moments ago. Tragedy after tragedy, mass shooting and massacre after mass shooting and massacre. And yet, it seems in Washington, the fix is in.
Right. I mean, you think about what happened after Sandy Hook. Nothing. You think about what happened after Parkland. Essentially nothing. And so you have Las Vegas is another great example.
Although the administration will say they got rid of bump stocks during that.
Right. But minor changes here. And so the status quo holds because the politics haven't changed for Republicans. Frankly, many Republican voters don't support stricter gun laws. The president doesn't support stricter gun laws. And Republicans right now support the president. And so none of these Republican lawmakers really have political incentive to go out on a limb. And until there's some sort of political uprising, the status quo is going to hold.
You think so, Sabrina?
Well, look.
You don't think it could change this time?
Not really, because at the risk of sounding cynical, we have been down this road before, at least when it comes to the federal level. You know who could make a difference is the president of the United States, who has the bully pulpit at his disposal. President Obama was criticized in his first term for not making gun control a priority. Sandy Hook was obviously a moment that really changed the consciousness of this nation, as well as his administration strategy. They couldn't get it through, but he did build the case to the American public. Donald Trump could do that now. He chooses not to do so.
All right. Thanks to all of you. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Coming up, sour notes in the land of SoulCycle, Equinox, and the Miami Dolphins after it's revealed that billionaire owner Stephen Ross is planning to host a political fundraiser for President Trump. Tonight, the man who owns Pro Football's Miami Dolphins, as well as the Equinox and SoulCycle fitness chains, has stumbled onto a new way to get his customers all worked up, but not in a good way. Let's bring in CNN's Christina Alessi. This has to do with plans for a political fundraiser, it turns out, and no backpedaling, it seems.
That's right. Stephen Ross, who is a billionaire real estate developer and an investor in some high-end gym concepts, including Equinox and SoulCycle, is hosting a fundraiser for President Trump tomorrow at his Hamptons home. Here's the problem. Equinox and SoulCycle specifically incorporate inclusion, diversity, LGBTQ rights into their business model. It is part of their marketing. For example, in June, they hosted a bunch of Pride rides in celebration of Pride Month. So this is the consumers of these brands really feel like this is a slap in the face, and they do not want to support anything, even indirectly, that supports President Trump. So the company put out a statement today saying, essentially, neither Equinox nor SoulCycle have anything to do with the event later this week and do not support it, as is consistent with the company's policies. No company profits are used to fund politicians, but they're making this technical distinction that just doesn't hold water, Jim. It doesn't matter to these people whether the company's profits are directly going to the fundraiser. They don't want to indirectly support the president either. Unclear, however, what the backlash will really bring. There was a lot of it on social media for sure.
Okay, Christina Leschi, half of Washington works out at SoulCycle, so I imagine a lot of people are raising questions about this. Christina, thank you very much. Coming up, CNN has learned that none of the 8 shooting victims recovering at an El Paso hospital wanted to meet with President Trump during his visit yesterday. So 2 previously discharged patients were brought to meet with the president instead, including a 2-month-old baby.
Now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country. Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.